Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today we're exploring a really vibrant, but I guess often sort of overlooked, part of Kurdish cultural heritage, the Zarbej tradition. We've been looking through some fascinating analysis provided to us, really trying to understand what makes this tradition so significant.
Mm-hmm. And our goal today really is to get a handle on who the Zarbej actually are, their importance, and especially, you know, the unique role women play in it. Plus, how it's being preserved, because this isn't just performance art. It's a whole sphere of cultural production deeply woven into everyday Kurdish life, as the analysis really shows.
Right. So let's get into it. What exactly does the research tell us a Zarbej is?
Well, the analysis defines them not as, say, professional artists in the modern sense, but as non-professional performers. They're described as vital purveyors of a whole spectrum, really, of oral genres, crucial in transmitting a worldview, historical consciousness, cultural memory, and often operating right within the household, you know, within those household rhythms.
Okay. And there's a really striking point made about who is typically doing this performing.
Yes, absolutely. The evidence strongly suggests that women have historically been the, quote, sole actors for the tradition Zarbej.
Sole actors, wow.
Yeah, it means they were the primary creators, the primary disseminators of works like laments, songs, folk songs, tales, stories, you name it. So it really makes the Zarbej tradition this critical and specifically female-led domain for artistic expression in Kurdish culture, kind of a counterpoint to the more public, often male-dominated spheres.
That's a really powerful distinction. The name itself, Zarbej, sounds unique. What does the research say about where it comes from?
It's straight from Kurdish, and it looks like a compound word. The first part, Zar, that can mean a few things, language, dialect, or mouth, but significantly it can also mean lament or moan.
Okay.
And the second part, Bej, that comes from the verb meaning to say or sing or tell. So putting those together, maybe teller or singer of language, or given that other meaning, teller or singer of laments. Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that laments are such a core genre for Zarbej women, well, it really points towards that second meaning being very relevant. The related term Zarbej, that just refers to the practice itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's seen as, you know, deeply rooted in the life of the people, right alongside other key oral traditions like storytelling, Serpadeji, and the more famous bardic singing, Dengeji.
Got it. And just to be clear, the analysis makes sure we don't mix up Zarbej with other terms that might sound a bit similar, like the Zarabs in Reunion, or the English word bizarre, or even that medieval Kurdish tribe, the Zerzar.
Yeah, the source is clear. These are completely distinct. No connection.
Okay. So moving beyond the definition, how do these Zarbej actually function within the bigger picture of Kurdish oral tradition and folklore?
Well, the analysis really highlights their incredible versatility. They weren't just specialists in one thing. They were purveyors of a really wide range of oral genres. Laments, different kinds of songs, folk tales, personal stories, a huge repertoire.
Well, we can get specific examples, right?
Yes, concrete examples. The research points to documented cases like Zeynep Ahmed performing the tale Çıroka Keseluk and Kerima Selim with Çıroka Nisko. And these performances were captured on video, which gives us this amazing direct link to their artistry.
It's not just repeating things they learned, though, is it? The research calls them source creators of works. That feels important.
It is. Creators and transmitters. Both. So it's not just rote memorization. It's an active shaping even generation of cultural material. They really function as the living memory of their society, preserving cultural heritage, collective history across generations through their own creative performances.
And this tradition is really woven into daily life, isn't it? You mentioned household rhythms. The analysis talks about spaces of domestic seclusion.
That intimacy is absolutely key. It's even suggested that Zarbej, along with storytelling and Dengbeji, were felt to be as essential to the Kurdish people as, quote, air, bread, and water. You see it in things like mothers soothing children with stories and songs. It's present in times of mourning, the sheen, and in celebrations, the shay. It's this fundamental, often female-led, way of expressing emotion, passing on values, reinforcing identity, all within the family structure.
It's interesting, too, that the analysis touches on how recording it, which is vital, obviously, for preservation, inevitably changes it, makes it more fixed, less fluid than it was in its living context.
That's always the tension with documenting oral traditions, isn't it?
Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Ruja Bosch, Hannah, let's see what we've got today. Sound of sipping.
Oh, this is good.
Yeah, nice and balanced today. Not too bitter, just right on the sugar.
Sound of sipping. Yes, very good. Well balanced. Just what we needed, I think.
Okay, refresh. Let's get back to this. It's really fascinating stuff.
Absolutely.
So we've been focusing on the Tsar Bey. The analysis also draws this comparison with the perhaps more widely known Dengbei tradition. Mm-hmm. What are the main differences and maybe more importantly, the connections?
Right. The comparison is really illuminating. The research contrasts them on a few levels. First, professionalism, or maybe lack thereof for a Tsar Bey. Tsar Beys were non-professional, mainly operating in domestic spaces. Dengbei, well, they could be informal too, but often functioned as professional or semi-professional performers. More public settings, like the Duan, the traditional gathering place.
Okay, so a difference in setting and professional status. What else?
Their primary role, perhaps? Tsar Beys are viewed more as the source creators. The analysis uses this great phrase, like the back kitchen, where the raw material of music and song is actually forged. Dengbei, on the other hand, are mainly known as the public performers, often tackling the longer epics, the historical narratives.
And the gender dimension here is huge, isn't it?
It's possibly the most significant distinction the analysis pulls out. While Dengbei settings were often male-dominated, women's public participation could be restricted by social norms. The research identifies women specifically as the sole actors for the tradition Tsar Bey itself.
So Tsar Bey is positioned as this uniquely female-led domain of cultural creation.
Exactly.
But then comes this, well, really pivotal insight, something that kind of flips the script. The analysis states Tsar Bey women are considered the source of the Dengbei tradition.
Right. That's not just a difference. It's a statement about origin, about hierarchy. It totally shifts the perspective.
It really does.
It positions the Tsar Bey tradition, coming largely from women's creativity in these domestic spaces, as the fundamental creative wellspring. The source from which the more public, often male-dominated Dengbei tradition draws its material. It suggests a kind of gendered division of cultural labor. The initial spark, the repository of many forms, resided with women in the private sphere, and that influenced the public performer's repertoire.
Though the analysis does note there could be overlap, right? Some individuals might have been both.
Yes, it allows for that fluidity. But the emphasis remains on the Tsar Bey, especially the women, as representing that foundational creative force. So despite the historical tendency to focus on, maybe valorize, the more public Dengbei, the research argues both traditions are equally vital, both essential for preserving this rich, multi-layered oral culture, history, musical memory of Mesopotamia. And the scholarly focus, now turning to the term Tsar Bey, is seen partly as correcting that historical imbalance,
yeah,
recognizing the contribution of these figures, who were maybe less visible before.
Let's hone in again on that pivotal role of women, because the analysis keeps coming back to it. Not just participants, but sole actors, source creators.
Mm-hmm. And the analysis points to some really crucial contemporary projects trying to address this historical lack of recognition. Initiatives like Tsar Bey and Dengbei women, whose voices resonate with music in Mesopotamia. The goal is specifically to record these female voices. Iran Masert from East Kurdistan is mentioned as a powerful example, a contemporary Tsar Bey artist whose work is being documented.
But despite being this foundational source, women Tsar Bey faced enormous challenges, didn't they?
Huge challenges. The analysis details how social traditions, religious norms, a generally male-dominated culture, all created significant obstacles. It limited their ability to participate in those public professional spheres where Dengbei often gained more renown.
And then there are external pressures on top of that.
Exactly. The research notes they often had to create, even record, their works under incredibly difficult conditions, sometimes using different identities and pseudonyms. This was due to national pressures, religious pressures, identity issues.
And because Kurdish itself was often a banned language in different places, right? Making any public expression risky.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which really transforms their work, doesn't it? It's not just cultural performance. It becomes this powerful act of cultural resistance, preservation against the odds, maintaining these traditions within domestic spaces, sometimes almost subversively. It ensured cultural survival. Their resilience is just, well, remarkable.
Yeah. It's also fascinating that the analysis mentions the interfaith aspect. Yazidi, Yersani, Muslim, Christian, Jewish women, all preserving works.
Yeah, across various media formats, too. It suggests this common Mesopotamian cultural layer that maybe transcended strict religious divides.
Yeah.
Perhaps facilitated by these informal women's networks operating outside the more formal, potentially segregated public spaces.
And contemporary researchers are really key in bringing this to light now. People like Zeynep Yassalam are mentioned.
Yes. Her work is highlighted as crucial. Compiling, Archiving Kurdish Oral Culture. And her work focuses specifically on what the analysis calls feminine pedagogy in cultural heritage.
Feminine pedagogy, what does that imply?
It suggests recognizing that women might have had distinct ways of teaching, learning, and transmitting knowledge within this tradition. Unique methods that need specific research approaches to fully capture and understand. And she's compiled collections of notable female artists, Almas Muhammad, Mehram Zan, Gulbahar, Nazreen Sherwan, Aishan. A really important work.
So, given all these historical challenges and the sheer richness of the tradition, how is it actually being preserved today? The analysis calls collecting this heritage crucial.
It seems vital on so many levels, protecting Kurdish national heritage, obviously, but also for revitalizing the Kurdish language, for building modern knowledge about Kurdish culture. And crucially, it serves as this wellspring of inspiration for modern Kurdish artists, writers, musicians, playwrights.
And the analysis details specific initiatives doing this work.
Yes, it reinforces the importance of projects like that Zar Bey's and Deng Bey Women Initiative. Compiling collections, trying to record artists under their real names now where possible, using insights from feminist pedagogy, systematic cataloging. Zeynep Yassalam's work, again, is central here.
And institutions are involved too.
Absolutely. The Kurdish Heritage Institute, KHI, in Soleimani is a key example. Founded back in 2003, its whole mission is to collect, preserve, and develop the oral culture of all the peoples of Kurdistan. They have archives, studios, publishing, collecting sound, vision, and text. Really comprehensive.
It's good to hear younger generations are getting involved too, using modern techniques.
Yes, the analysis mentions that. Young people using professional and technically advanced ways to collect folklore. That shows it's not just about looking back, it's about carrying it forward. And the analysis also touches on the ethics of collecting now.
Right. That seems important.
Very. Emphasizing building real relationships with the Zarbej, working in local dialects, documenting the context of the performance, not just the words or melody. And critically, giving full credit to Zarbej as creators, not just, you know, passive informants. That shift acknowledges their intellectual and cultural authority, especially the women's, moving away from potentially exploitative older practices.
But the research is realistic about the ongoing difficulties.
Oh, for sure. Documenting a fluid oral tradition is just inherently tricky. You've got issues with maybe poor quality original recordings, the pseudonyms making attribution hard, the very nature of performance that it changes, it adapts. Plus, the simple fact that materials are often scattered across lots of different sources, private collections, it's a huge task.
And that point about archiving, not necessary, but it does change things.
Exactly, the double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Essential for preservation, but putting performances into archives, especially digital ones, can strip them of their original intimate context. It's a trade-off you have to be aware of.
So how does all this resonate today, this historical tradition?
Right.
How does it connect to contemporary life, both in Kurdistan and, say, in the diaspora?
Well, the analysis definitely highlights the role of the Kurdish diaspora in cultural revival efforts, generally language, literature, music. Cultural production in diaspora communities, the analysis mentions Berlin as an example, often uses things like ethnic food, circle dances, music, religious melodies as strategies to maintain identity. And activities rooted in the Zarbej tradition, like storytelling, singing traditional songs, they fit right into that, keeping the connection alive.
And maybe the diaspora offers spaces that are in some ways freer. Freer from some of the traditional constraints that might have limited women's public performance back home.
That's a really interesting possibility, yeah. The analysis doesn't explicitly state that, but it's a logical thought. Academically, the term Zarbej is definitely gaining ground. It's appearing in journals like Folklore Uzuman. It's being accepted as, you know, a proper analytical category for discussing these traditions.
The analysis puts Zarbej in this lineage of oral storytellers before the novel came along in Kurdish literature, but it also clarifies something about a magazine.
Right. It positions them historically, which is important. But it explicitly says there's no evidence in the material provided of a specific literary magazine actually called Zarbej, unlike other influential journals, say, Hawar, just to avoid any confusion there.
Okay. And beyond academia, there's active revitalization happening.
Yes. Young people collecting folklore, specific projects like Folklore Gunde Bafe, recording Zarbej women narrating stories like Shiroka Keselek right now.
And this material isn't just being stored away, it's feeding into modern arts.
Absolutely. Inspiring modern Kurdish literature, music, theater. It shows the tradition isn't just a historical artifact, it's a living source of creativity, still relevant.
And these efforts, they're not just about culture for culture's sake, are they? The analysis links them to bigger issues.
Definitely. Cultural survival, the fight for language rights, asserting national identity, especially given the history of suppression. It's all deeply connected.
Okay, so let's try and bring this together. Zarbej, non-professional, mainly female creators, foundational to Kurdish cultural memory, diverse oral genres.
Mm-hmm. Women's role absolutely central, despite huge historical challenges. And crucially, their creative work seen as the source for the Dengbej tradition.
And preservation efforts are vital, ongoing, and adapting, using new tools and ethical approaches.
Exactly. It remains this vital link to identity, a repository of history, a real testament to resilience, and a constant source of inspiration for artists today.
Recognizing the Zarbej, especially the women, doesn't just add information. It really enriches, maybe even reframes, our whole understanding of Kurdish culture.
Absolutely. And the future, as the analysis suggests, will probably be this blend. Traditional, intimate transmission continuing alongside modern archiving and dissemination. That brings opportunities, wider reach, but also those challenges we talked about, maintaining context, authenticity. Continued support for these efforts is just essential.
And maybe a final thought for you listening, drawn from this analysis. Consider how much of the creative work that truly shapes any culture might happen in those invisible spaces. The homes, the domestic settings, not just the public stages we tend to focus on. What does recognizing figures like the Zarbej change about how you understand where cultural heritage actually comes from and whose voices are truly foundational in shaping it?